This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. Listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In this episode, Reggie talks about the open, empty, clear awareness that is our fundamental nature. This great space of being is endless, unborn, and does not die. When we discover this space, we feel absolutely free and at home. This talk is from Mahamudra for the Modern World, a 37-hour intensive training course produced by Sounds True. Reggie will teach a residential retreat based on these teachings, March 22nd to the 30th, in Crestone, Colorado. To learn more about this opportunity to study directly with Reggie, visit dharmaocean.org.
As a way of further introducing the journey we're about to make, I want to talk a little bit about the basic process of the Mahamudra training. One thing I want to emphasize in what I say is that everything I'm going to discuss for the next few minutes is initially a theory, it's initially a roadmap, but as I've been saying, it needs to be translated into our direct human experience. At this point, I'm giving you the roadmap so that when we encounter the experience, you'll have a framework for it. The Mahamudra is a Vajrayana practice. What I mean by this is, in the Buddhist world, there are three major orientations that you'll find. There are the teachings of early Buddhism. They're called early because they're the ones that derive from the time of the Buddha and from the schools that grew out of his immediate teaching. The main tradition that survives from that time is called Theravada Buddhism and is found in Southeast Asia. The second variety is called Mahayana Buddhism, which means the great vehicle, and it's based on the ideal of the all-compassionate being called the Bodhisattva, who dedicates his or her life to helping other people. This tradition is found in northern and eastern Asia, and both Chan Buddhism in China and Zen Buddhism in Japan are examples of Mahayana Buddhism, whereas the Theravada tradition derives from shortly after the Buddha's death in terms of its visibility historically. We don't really see the Mahayana until around the beginning of the Common Era. It's believed that the Mahayana teachings go back to the time of the Buddha in some form or other, but the Mahayana traditions were practiced in secret, and so they weren't written down, and it's only around zero of the Common Era that we begin to see them historically in texts and in archaeological evidence in the next few hundred years. The Vajrayana tradition comes a little bit later, and we're going to talk about that in some detail. It doesn't become visible until around 500 CE, 500 of the Common Era. The Vajrayana tradition contains a variety of different practices, again, which we'll discuss shortly. But the most important is this pinnacle teaching of Mahamudra, which developed at the very core of the Vajrayana in India. The basic orientation of Mahamudra and of the whole Vajrayana tradition is founded on a certain way of looking at the human spiritual journey. Both the Theravada and the Mahayana traditions that we know about tend to work from the outside in. What I mean by this is, at the core of the human person, there's an experience of Buddha nature, or human freedom, whatever you want to call it. And the non-Vajrayana traditions tend to peel away the outer coverings over this core, working from the outside in, and getting finally closer and closer and closer until the outside core has been eliminated and all that's left is the enlightenment or the awakening experience. And that's what it means to be enlightened from their point of view. The Vajrayana works differently. What it does is it begins with the end of the journey rather than you don't touch the end of the journey until you get to the end. In the Vajrayana tradition, through various means that we'll talk about, the inner core of enlightenment, which is present within all of us all the time from the moment of our conception, becomes the beginning of the journey. Through various practices and interactions with the teacher, we're able to touch this inner core and experience it for ourselves. We are able to see the fundamental freedom that is our foundation, and then we are able to carry out the journey because we still have to make the journey. Even though we've touched it, we still have all of the neurotic patterns and the identifications with our habitual ways of going about things, all of our fear, all of our anger, all of that is still there. And so we need to work on it. But we work on it from the point of view of what's called the end of the journey, the experience of the final goal of meditation. Now let's see if we can translate that into a little bit more of an experiential understanding. We're still talking theoretically, but I want to try to show you a little bit what we're talking about. Mahamudra begins by opening up a channel to our foundation. Now what is this foundation? Let's look at some of the terms that are used to point to this fundamental underlying foundation, which is known as the Buddha nature. Sometimes it's called the natural state. It refers to an intelligence within us that is not only beyond ego, it's not only has nothing to do with ego at all, it actually is the foundation of our whole person. All of our human experience is rooted, we could say, in the natural state, in this intelligence. It's also called basic awareness. What this means is that within us, at any given time, there's a fundamental, open, empty, and clear awareness, wakefulness, consciousness, that is, it's like the sky. It's vast, it's empty, it's open, it's bright. And it is there to be experienced within us. We can gain access to this at any time. For most of us, we're completely experientially unaware of this fundamental basic awareness. For many of us, we think that the whole of our personality and all of our human experience is just made up of the stuff that happens, the emotions, the thoughts, the neurotic upheavals, the dreams, the memories, the images, the feelings of all kinds. We think that that's pretty much it, that there's nothing more to it in our experience. Through the practices of Mahamudra, we're able to shift the situation of our human experience momentarily so that we can see that there's actually more to it. We could use the image of an ocean that is covered in debris. I'm told there's a place in the Pacific Ocean where vast acres and square miles of plastics that have been tossed into the ocean gather, and they're floating on the surface of the ocean in this mass of surface pollution, and that if we were to fly over this particular part of the ocean, all we would see is this debris of discarded plastic. And yet, literally, a foot or two down, we would hit the clear, open, empty water. And so it is with our own human experience. The surface of our mind is very debris-ridden. There's a lot of stuff there. Some of it's nice stuff and some of it's garbage. A lot of it is poisonous. Some of it is actually helpful. But through the practice of ordinary life, that's all we see. When we engage in the Mahamudra training, a very important part of the training at the beginning is that we begin to clear some of that debris away from the surface of our mind. And when we do that, we become aware that there is something underneath. It's not exactly a tangible object. It's not like all the other objects of our mind. It's actually something that is bright and open and empty, and that's the basic awareness. When we begin to journey into this basic awareness, as we're going to do in this program, and we begin to actually look into it and explore it, we find that it's rather fathomless. It's like an ocean of light and clarity and openness that has no bottom and it has no boundaries. For this reason, sometimes this underlying nature, this natural state, is called the immeasurable expanse, meaning it's an expanse. It goes out in all directions. It's like this infinite foundation under us, and literally we can't touch the boundaries. As we journey into this particular fundamental state or Buddha nature or natural state that is the basis of who we are as a person, we start to sense some qualities in it, as we will do in this program later on. One of the terms of the natural state is the unborn mind. This refers to the fact that when we look at this empty, open, clear awareness that is our basic nature, we see that it has no beginning. There's no time when it arose. There's no point at which it came into being from non-being. We can see experientially that it actually really has always existed, strangely enough, although we haven't existed as a person always, this has, this basic state. And in addition, we can see that it has no end. It's not something that is going to die, because it's not like that. It's not a conditioned thing among other things. It's a different order of being. And strangely enough, although it's unborn and undying, and although it's infinite in its expanse, still, it's a matter of direct personal experience, and we see it as our fundamental nature, the ground of our being. Moreover, when we touch it and surrender into it, we feel we're at home. Strangely, we feel we're more ourselves than at any other time in our lives. And there can be a feeling of tremendous peace and tremendous contentment and tremendous freedom. This fundamental state, this open expanse that is us, that is most fundamentally us, is also called the great space of being. Meaning, there is a feeling when we touch it that it includes everything. On the one hand, while it is us most intimately and truly who we are, at the same time, it's a space that includes even the most distant galaxies and the most distant regions in this huge, vast, limitless universe of ours. The natural state is also called the awakened state because there is a feeling that it is absolutely pure, that it's immaculate, that when we are touching it, there's a sense of being completely awake. And then finally, as I mentioned, it's called the Buddha nature. It is the enlightened mind itself. So to say that it's always present within us isn't to say that we're enlightened, because obviously we're not. That's why we're doing this work. It doesn't mean we're completely fulfilled spiritually, or it doesn't mean that we've reached the end of the journey. But what it does mean is that the end of the journey is within us right at this exact moment. So very important for us to begin to make acquaintance with this fundamental awakened foundation that is most fundamentally us. When we do this in the Mahamudra, it has several very important impacts on our journey. For one thing, it shows us in a direct experiential way that all the teaching about enlightenment and about fulfilling our spiritual calling and about human freedom and about, the immaculate, fundamental awakening within. All of these ways of speaking are rooted in something that's actually real, and we see it for ourselves and we experience for ourselves. That gives us a sense of tremendous inspiration. For those of us who have not touched the natural state, the teachings of enlightenment are somewhat theoretical, and we take them on faith. But one of the things about the Vajrayana is you never take anything on faith at all, even the idea of a spiritual journey and even the idea that you could achieve some kind of realization. But once you've seen this for yourself, you know for a fact that that possibility is there. In fact, the reality is there. The second thing you see through touching the natural state is you begin to realize how covered over it is. It's very covered over with all kinds of armoring and all kinds of surface pollution and cloaks and masks and whatever you want to call it. In the Mahamudra tradition, these are called inessential defilements. The basic nature is always remains pure and can never be stained because it's infinite, it's open, and it's clear from beginningless time until forever. So it can never be compromised, but at the same time it is covered over, and even after we've touched it through the Mahamudra practices, even then it still remains largely inaccessible. And the reason is that the habitual patterns of our life lead us to turn away from it, to try to fulfill whatever needs, anxieties, fears, express our anger, our ambition, our neediness, whatever it may be. We're always engaged in a lot of relative activities to try to feed ourselves and keep ourselves safe and secure as an ego, as a small self. So seeing the basic nature in a way is a mirror and shows us exactly how evasive we are as people, evasive of our own freedom and evasive of our own human fulfillment. In one hand, this is a rather daunting discovery, but on the other hand, it actually shows us what we have to work on. So by seeing the basic nature, we have a much clearer idea of what the journey involves and also of our particular very unique human patterns, how we operate, how we do things, and how we're going to have to proceed. Thirdly, seeing the basic nature by showing us where we need to go and in some sense where we actually are, it inspires us to commit ourselves to a path of practice, in fact, a lifetime of practice, because we see what we're going to get out of it. We see for sure that if we're willing to make the journey, then the freedom and the really happiness and joy that we've experienced by touching the basic nature can be ours, not just in a momentary way, but it can be ours as a way of life, as a way of being human in the world. In the Mahamudra tradition and in the Vajrayana in a broader way, this touching of this basic nature of the awakened state, of the immeasurable expanse, this touching of the unborn mind or the great space of being, initially happens through what's called transmission or the introduction of the natural mind. And that's something that we'll be doing later in this program. After this happens, then we begin to learn how to make the journey to that state ourselves. And again, that's something that we'll be working on quite extensively in this program. One of the discoveries that happens in the course of the path is that the source of our fundamental perception, our ability to see and perceive things, is not the ego mind and it's not the limited consciousness, but what sees, what apprehends, what experiences is the awakened state itself. In other words, sometimes we think that it's the small I that experiences things. But what we find out through touching the awakened state is that that's actually incorrect. that what sees, what cognizes, what perceives, what receives the experience of our life in all of its details is actually the awakened state itself that is within us. What this means is that our initial experience of the world always happens from a non-ego place. Our experience of relative reality, and by this I mean the things that I've mentioned, our thoughts, our feelings, our strong emotions, our intuitions, our sense perceptions, what we see, what we hear, what we taste, what we touch, our dreams, our fantasies, all of it, that what sees those in the beginning as the awakened state and the initial experience of the human person is this moment of what we call pure perception or pure experience, where there's no contamination by the small self. There are no projections of the paranoid ego. There's no limitation based on our own hope and fear and our own ambition. When we see this, and this is a momentous discovery, we realize that the freedom that we find when we touch the awakened state is only the beginning of the journey. That we see through the Mahamudra practices that number one is we need to develop this sense of our own freedom, our own immaculate unborn awareness. And then we need to realize that there is an entire experience of life that is rooted in that intelligence and is going on with us all the time under the surface that is very, very different from our habitual experience of the world. When we do not exit into our paranoid ego and our usual attempt to control what we see and what we hear and to force the world to meet our own expectations, when we experience the world from the viewpoint of the natural state and we don't exit into the ego world, the tiny self, we experience the world as being bright and endlessly colorful and vivid and extraordinarily beautiful and very, very powerful. In fact, we begin to experience the world that we live in, this very world that we are smelling and tasting and touching right now, as being a realm of living energies, of a continual birth and death of experience. We realize that we live in the midst of a world that is happening all around us. It's a world that in the Vajrayana tradition is called the sacred world. Having had this experience of what's called pure relative truth or pure phenomena, we realize that spirituality is not simply a matter of freeing ourselves from the machinations of ego. It's not simply a matter of touching the awakened state, but it has two phases, in fact, this spiritual journey of ours. The first phase is contacting our basic nature and then realizing that that's only the beginning of the journey. Even when we have fully developed our relationship to the open, empty space of our Buddha nature, even then, we're still at the beginning of the journey in some sense, meaning that then we need to turn and realize that we need to live as human beings, but not as egocentric people. When we begin to experience the world from the point of view of freedom, when we begin to see that the world has its own being and that phenomena themselves, all of the things that make up our life are inherently pure and beautiful and powerful, then we begin to move along the path in a very interesting way. We begin to realize more and more that we have a unique mission in the world as a human being. That mission is to taste and touch and feel the world in our very unique way. that what other people think we should be, what other people think we should be experiencing, what other people think we should be doing is irrelevant, because our own human experience begins to become so potent and so powerful and so strong. As we begin to experience the sacred world from a non-ego viewpoint, we realize that we need to express that experience. We need to express what we're seeing, what we're perceiving about the world in our life. And this unlocks a river of creativity in us. The Mahamudra journey talks a lot about relative truth. It talks a lot about relative experience, conditioned experience. Again, all the details we go through in our life. And it says that ultimately, reality delivers itself not fundamentally, not finally. It says that reality delivers itself initially through touching our Buddha nature, but finally and fundamentally, it delivers itself through the experience of our life. At that point, we begin to realize that we're moving through a life of intense, continual, surprising, and transformative discoveries. And those discoveries are actually our daily life, what we go through day by day by day. As we live our life and make that journey through our life, we realize that the spiritual journey is not a journey from life to freedom where we leave life behind. The spiritual journey is actually made by living life, by experiencing the things that come up, by going through the unique set of encounters and feelings and emotions and people that we meet, giving up the attempt to control and limit and manipulate them by running them through the filter, the meat grinder of our ego, no longer trying to make life fit into our terms, but learning how to see life and experience it on life's terms. Through this journey, we become more and more unusual, you could say. We begin to realize that our whole human experience is absolutely, ultimately, and finally unique. That how we see things, even day by day, is not only unlike anything anybody else sees in quite that way, but it's also unlike anything we've ever seen before. Every moment of experience we start to realize is a unique moment and a fresh moment and a moment that's never happened before. We bring to this journey all of our habitual patterns, all of our hopes and fears, all the paranoia we have, all of the fear, really, frankly, of our vulnerability and fear of the unknown and fear of the future. So we engage this journey just as completely ordinary people. But as we deepen our experience of the awakened state in ourselves, and as we begin to feel the confidence and the openness and the sense of trust that comes from that experience, and as we begin to see the freshness and unprecedented nature of our human experience moment by moment, it gives us a very powerful way to work with our own hope and fear, our own ambition, our own attempts to manipulate, to control, to shut down reality around us, because the power of our relative experience is so immense that we fail in our attempts to block it out, to ignore it, to deny it, to manipulate it, to try to egofy it, you might say. The journey unfolds, we realize more and more what a unique person we are, and this is what it means within the Vajrayana framework, through the practice of Mahamudra. This is what it means to become a true person. This is what it means to step into one's true personhood. So it is possible, in fact, it's necessary, when we talk in Buddhist language, we talk about egolessness, of course, which means that the small, petty ego really has no substance. It's just a thought. It's just a fear reaction. But then we have to talk about the true self. And the true self is the person that we begin to discover through this process of living and realizing more and more and more how unusual we are, how unique we are, how incomparable our experience is. The true person is the one who, having seen the uniqueness and becoming more and more who we truly are, needs to express, needs to create, needs to bring the message of the beauty of ordinary life to other people. One of the things we discover in the Mahamudra journey is that this idea that we may have had in our past, that the goal of human life is to set up and establish a fixed self, a person with a specific definition, a static image of who we are, the attempt to become something static and concrete and pinned down, is actually insane. It's actually crazy. Because that's not how it is, and that's not who we are. The more we journey, the more we begin to realize that what it means to be a person is that everything in us, and in fact that we are, change moment by moment by moment. We are evolution. We are a process of unfolding. There's nothing, there is no prison. There is nothing that's pinned down. There's nothing that's fixed. As we begin to shed the illusion that we have to be something static, we begin to feel more and more free. And as I said previously, we begin to realize that freedom is not freedom from life. It's not freedom from the person that we fundamentally are. The freedom that we've always been seeking and the freedom that we find on the journey is the freedom for life. It's the freedom to be this person who is ever in growth, unfolding, transformation, and becoming. The freedom for the life that is rushing towards us as we journey along the path. This orientation of the Mahamudra as being about opening up our experience of being human and being alive means that it is not confined within any culture. The practitioners of Mahamudra have always said that this tradition is a human tradition and that the journey offered is a human journey and that the freedom that's offered is a freedom that is in the deepest heart of every human who has ever lived and is available at this moment to any person regardless of culture or age or race or physical or economic or social condition. It's a freedom that was given to us when we first became humans hundreds of thousands of years ago. This is the freedom that people have always longed for. And this is the freedom that all the world's religions are about. And that even people who turn their back on religion, it's because they seek this freedom, this fundamental human freedom and fulfillment. So the Mahamudra tradition gathers together all the strands of our life, and it relates to us and calls us within the midst of our modern world. And through practicing it, we gain the possibility of discovering a way of being that can connect us with all people on this planet and all people who have ever lived or ever will live. When we see this, it creates within us automatically, immediately, intuitively, a deep sense of universal compassion and a deep sense of love for everything that is.
Download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Our music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.